This episode of Behind the Video is brought to you by the Independent Media Network. The Independent Media Network helps journalists and content creators create their own jobs by building sustainable online businesses. If you're an unemployed or underemployed journalist or content creator, visit imnct.com for more information. Hey everybody, it is Lon Seibin. We are back for Behind the Video. This is episode number 92, and joining me today, as always, is our talented co-host, Tim Street from Los Angeles, California, the home of the shaking. How's it going, Tim?
Whoa, it's crazy here. Oh my God.
It's par for the course, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's just Southern California.
So when we get an earthquake out here, it's like the end of the world, but...
Well, I definitely see with these last two earthquakes that we've had, these sizable ones, that we are not prepared. Definitely. People are going to be in a world of hurt if we do have a big one.
So hopefully that won't happen while we're on the broadcast.
Hopefully it won't happen in our lifetime.
Exactly.
But we do have a lot of news to talk about.
We do, and we should have a guest coming up too, right?
We might have a guest.
Right, we'll see if she reemerges. There is quite a bit to talk about on YouTube, especially this week, or at least for independent or somewhat independent video content. We should start, though, with the most subscribed channels in February, because TubeFilter and OpenSlate kind of compile this list every month, and it's always intriguing. So I pulled off the all of the Vevo people and kind of stuck with the independent creators. Number five, Sky Does Minecraft. So playing video games can lead to a career for you. 790,000 subscribers in the month of February alone. Pretty cool. Hola Soy German, our Spanish friend there, 934,000 subscribers in the month of February. Another gaming channel, Venos Gaming, 938,000 subscribers. Gaming is kind of dominating here, isn't it?
Yeah, it does seem to be doing really well.
YouTube's own channel, which is what they use for their like live music events and stuff, 1 million subscribers. And then PewDiePie came in at number one. He acquired 2.2 million subscribers in the month of February. So that is pretty amazing for a guy that's taking a step back. He can live off the royalties, right? But definitely shows, though, that the YouTube subscribers trend younger, right?
Yeah, it does seem that way. You know, one of the videos that popped up this week that I really liked there's a VFX, it's actually a DreamWorks animator, and this guy, his name is Daniel Hashimoto, and he's got a three-year-old son, and he just basically shoots home videos of his three-year-old son, and then he adds VFX to these videos, and this thing's been blowing up over the weekend. And I think it'll be great to see how it does next week. It's called Action Movie Kid is the name of the channel. And they have a whole playlist that you can check out. But basically what it is, you know, the kid will be like in Toys R Us and he'll grab a lightsaber, and he'll, you know, shake it while it's still in the box, and then it comes to life and it looks like, you know,
he's tearing
Darth
holes
Vader's
in the shelf and everything, right?
Know, it's awesome. So I'm excited to see where this goes. I mean, you know, just him at the breakfast table's got like 821,000 views. So it's a fun one.
It's amazing too. Well, actually not amazing, but really smart about how this guy is doing this, because he could have done this on Vine, right? He could have done it on Instagram. These are like short 10-second, 12-second videos, but he's putting them on YouTube and really getting, you know, more than just a one-hit viral wonder out of this. He's really smartly, you know, turning this into a subscription-based channel where he can monetize. And the toy lightsaber one has 3 million views, and it's so easy,
right? And lots of people are doing stories about it, too. It's getting a lot of press because it's so family-friendly, and it's so cute. You just love this guy.
Yeah, even though he's playing with weapons at the time, blowing stuff up, it's really cool stuff. Now, the how much time do you think it takes to do a 12-second video like the lightsaber one? Because this is not easy, right?
Yeah, shooting it just takes his time going down to the Toys R Us and that kind of thing. But doing that VFX, I mean, he probably does it with After Effects or Maya. I'm not sure which, but I would imagine it takes him a couple hours, if that.
Right, and plus he's doing it professionally, so he kind of can just do this in his sleep probably, but pretty remarkable.
Looks like Mickey just joined the call.
Hi.
Hey, there she is. Hello, Mickey. How you doing?
Sorry about the delay. You would think that Google's browser would be all set up with the plugins required to run a Google Hangout, but it wasn't. Here I am.
That's okay. It takes Tim about half hour to get in every week, too. So
that's right. I have to do my hair.
Nice beard, Tim.
Thank you.
Tim has a great photo dressed up as Colonel Sanders from Halloween, and it is like... It is amazing. So
nice.
He wears it well. So Mickey Krimble is joining us. You are the founder of the Creative District, and this is now I think your third startup, right? You had a successful one with the neighbor goods, right? And then you're starting up a new community based thing. So why don't you tell us about Creative District and what you got going there?
Yeah, Creative District is a collaboration platform for professional creatives. We're targeting filmmakers initially. So the idea is sort of like LinkedIn, a professional networking community. So it's a project-based professional network. So you add a project, your film, and you say these are, you know, this is some photo, videos, text. You create a really nice, rich content, rich profile for your project. And then you say, these are my collaborators. You know, these are the five great people I'm working with. And now you have this great tool with which to recruit new collaborators, right? Because you have really awesome content showing how cool the thing is that you're working on. And you have the social validation of, you know, here's my great producer, my two awesome actors, and my amazing editor. And so when other potential collaborators see that project, they have the information to sort of make the decision whether they want to apply, if they're at the right level. And then we facilitate those conversations and hopefully help you find the right people. And then as you add projects, you're also sort of building your experience on the network. So it's not a sort of traditional text-based resume where, you know, where did you go to school? Nobody really cares.
Right, you want to see what you can do, right, versus
exactly,
where you went to school.
Exactly, right. And so you build up this sort of history over time, and then you also build your network, and then you can manage that network. Because we found that a lot of creatives sort of have a challenge with even managing the contacts they already have.
It's true, because as a creative people want to create, they don't want to spend a lot of time like having to deal with all the nuances of the business side or even getting all their crew together, right? It's a very different world now where you really can't afford to hire somebody to do all this for you. So maybe a platform is the way to go. And Tim, you know, one of the things we've seen we've interviewed a lot of creators on the show is that they often seem to know each other already. So this might be a helpful way to get people going, right?
Yeah, absolutely. When I first heard about this platform, I was pretty excited because it sounds like a great way to tap into the friends of your friends that you kind of trust or have some social currency with. But then also the fact that this startup is funded by Technicolor, is that right?
That's correct. Yep, they're our one investor currently.
Yeah, and so that to me seems like, okay, the next step would involve some other services, not just individual people, but okay, I need digital intermediates, I need coloring, I need, you know, what else do I need for my project? And that opens up a whole new can of worms. No, it opens up a whole new way of interacting with services that independents might not normally know about.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we heard a lot is, you know, filmmakers are pretty good at crewing up. You know, they know who they're going to use as their DP. They work with the same people quite frequently. But it's this sort of cross-pollination of people in other industries that they're really looking for as well, like people with social media experience or people who are really good at building websites. And so it's really us to kind of build this platform for filmmakers initially, but with an eye toward really broadening it to other creative industries pretty quickly, right? Because in order for filmmakers to succeed, it really requires that cross-pollination. And we think there's a lot of opportunity in media at large for people like web designers and, you know, graphic designers and filmmakers to kind of come together and take advantage of this new media industry that's evolving around us.
What about web series creators? Do they have access to this? And what do you have to do to get your hands on it?
Absolutely. One of the things we launched with was this monthly grant program. I'll be honest, this started off as a marketing thing, you know, like, well, you have this chicken and egg problem anytime you launch a social network, right, where it's not super valuable for the people who first sign up because the network isn't there yet. And so I wanted to think of a way to make it valuable for people right out of the gate. And so that's where this idea for the grant program came from. And so we're giving away up to $5,000 every month to projects of all types at all stages as a way to kind of help them get their project done. And so as I started thinking more about that program and sort of what our mission is as a company, our mission really is to help people create more, just to help people make more stuff. And we're doing that by connecting them to each other, but also through this grant program. And so it's really turned into like a core feature of what we do, and we're looking for ways to expand it. But it's important to us that those grants sort of represent a wide range of projects on the network. And so we already have a web short that's won a grant. We're looking at web series as well as feature films, documentaries. We definitely want to kind of support this ecosystem as it evolves outside of your traditional film, you know, what we think of as filmmakers.
What do you have to do to apply for the grant? What strings are attached? What are you expecting from somebody that gets a grant?
So by creating a project on the network, on Creative District, you can check a little box that says, I want to be considered for the grant. We don't look at anything outside of what you put on your project page. So we're not looking at private reels or, you know, secret rough cuts, anything like that. It's all driven by the content on your project, because obviously that's what helps us show this great community. And so we're looking for projects that have lots of content, you know, video, photos, text. We really like behind the scenes. You know, the more you can tell us about the process of creating a project, and the more you're showing great usage of our tools, obviously that's something we're looking for. As I mentioned, we're looking for diversity of projects, so we want to make sure we're not funding all feature films. We're also looking for diversity of stages. So we like we have one now that's in post-production. We have one that just completed. We have one that's just going into pre-production, right? So it's important to us to show that, you know, that we're diverse there as well. Different topics. We don't want everything to be, you know, if we see two films about the same thing, you know. So we're really just looking for a wide range of projects. We're keeping it pretty open as far as what types of things we'll give a grant to. We do want it to be a project where $5,000 will make a significant difference. So we're often, you know, when people apply, if we're interested in awarding them with a grant, we'll ask them, what are you going to use the money for? Because that's a nice story for us to say, you know, wrap it up neatly and say, well, they used the $5,000 for this. And then the good part about the grant program, too, is that you actually remain eligible month to month. So it's on a rolling basis. So if you apply once, you're still in the running for the following month. And the way to kind of keep us aware of what's going on, obviously, is to add content to your project. So we're constantly checking out what's on there. There's so many amazing things on the network. It's been the most fun part of it. But as a team, you know, we're tracking projects that we find interesting and looking for, you know, updates so that we can see that they're making progress.
That's really neat. And $5,000 can go a long way when you're a small creator, especially doing digital, right? I mean, you could almost fund an entire project with that small amount of money. Can go a long way. So
definitely.
Let me ask you, because you had a successful startup where, you know, there was some collaboration involved with Neighbor Goods, right? It was sharing things. I mean, this seems to be a theme of all the things that you're working on. What have you learned from that first startup experience that you're applying here?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, even before I was a founder, my experience is definitely built in community and, you know, community building and customer relationships and sort of, I've always been at the crossover of digital and offline community. So, you know, we're doing a ton of events, you know, and like one of the things I've learned is that it's really important to get people face to face. So we'll be hosting a lot of events in Los Angeles initially to get people together. It's interesting because, you know, people use all these tools as another, you know, we see people creating relationships and using all these tools to kind of fuel that our need for social interaction. And especially in this industry and in media, I mean, you can't get anything done without those relationships. Everything happens through relationships. You know, when I first joined this project, we were sort of researching, like, what were the two main needs that filmmakers and other creators really have? And one is funding, obviously, and there's tons of innovation happening there, Kickstarter, Indiegogo, Seed and Spark. And then the other is this idea of, you know, managing your network and finding the best collaborators. But what you realize is that if you kind of really break down those two needs, everything comes down to relationships, including funding.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Everything you do, every piece of putting a project together comes down to relationships and owning those relationships and being able to reach out to them and ask them for help when you need it. And so we realize that that's really the core of what's required here. We have all these tools. We've got, you know, all these amazing, now really affordable editing tools and self-distribution, and, you know, you can video on demand with Vimeo and all these amazing new things to kind of build your career yourself, but the relationships are still the fundamental necessity underneath all of that. And that's why Creative District just seems like such a huge opportunity. And with my background in community building and sort of sharing, resource sharing, my partner, Mike Mays, comes from a startup called Work Market, which is sort of freelance job market. So with our experience combined, we feel like we can really, you know, turn on the jets on this idea and like build it into something really amazing for our users.
What attracted you to online creators, going from, you know, helping neighbors find, you know, goods that they can share to this? Were you involved in the production side of things? You know, people that were, what led you to think that this was a good market to enter?
Yeah, I mean, I actually have a background in film. I went to film school, moved to LA about 11 years ago, worked at Participant Media. I was the third employee there. And that's when I kind of got a taste for what was happening in the startup space and online. And, you know, that was the beginning of this explosion of online media. It was 2004 is the year that the word blog was added to the dictionary, right? And so, you know, I was just, my communications study plus, you know, my experience in production and just seeing this happen. I mean, I've been interested in media forever. I have a long lost video blog, some people might remember. I've been doing this stuff for a while, and it's been interesting to me. And now the interesting thing is I just came back from South by Southwest, where I was on a panel about, you know, tools for filmmakers to kind of DIY. And the funny thing is I was on, I swear, the identical panel like 7 years ago.
So the same problem is still there, right?
People are ready now. That's the difference. Mm-hmm. Filmmakers are not traditional, at least traditional filmmakers. Obviously, it's different for, you know, web producers, but traditional filmmakers are not traditionally early adopters, right? They'll wait to see if other people have success with something before trying it out. And I feel like now, because of the success of Kickstarter and other crowdfunding platforms, now people in traditional media are like, wait a second, this is real. Like these tools are not a joke. Like, I can make a real career this way. And so now I think, the response to our beta launch has completely blown away our expectations. I mean, we have almost 7,000 users now, and we launched on Wednesday.
Oh wow, this is really
yeah.
Fresh. Okay.
Yeah.
So this is busy time now.
Yeah. I think it's the right project at the right time.
And what would you say, like, the biggest challenges? Maybe it's different for each discipline in the production phase here, but, you know, beyond like meeting up, like, let me ask you this, like, how would somebody in, you know, the middle of Kansas mm-hmm. fare on Creative District? Do you think are there certain parts of the country or world that are better in tune for this kind of work? Or do you think this might actually help people in, you know, far flung places find each other?
Well, it's interesting because we initially thought, we'll start in LA, you know, because we're in LA and there's film schools in LA and there's all this production happening in LA. But we figured we'll leave it open and see what happens, but we'll focus our marketing efforts in Los Angeles. But it turns out that there's much more density in Los Angeles, New York, you know, where you would expect it. But we're seeing people sign up all over the place. And my hope is that we can sort of, some of the tools we want to add are like we don't have really great messaging features yet. I mean, we launched with kind of bare bones, but we'll get there. And the idea is we'll kind of want to open up the conversation to allow more mentorship and questions. So it's not necessarily just about how can I crew up for this film I'm shooting in my neighborhood tomorrow, but it's also about building a broader professional network. And we'll get there. We don't have those tools yet, but we will.
You got to start with the minimally viable product and then build it up from there. So, Tim, how do you see people using this?
Well, I think there's a lot of people that have, say they might have three or four friends that are their core group that they're going to turn to, but they might need to do something like they might need to connect with somebody that is in the VFX world and they don't know anybody. So I think this is a great way for them to reach out to friends of friends and see who has that special skill. And there are other ways that I could see people using this as well, to where they just want to get feedback from other people or they want to make friends around the world. They might be interested in shooting in Prague and not know anybody in Prague. This is a great way to see who are you somehow connected to in Prague so that you don't show up and have all your money stolen and your camera equipment impounded as soon as you get off the plane.
It sounds like a personal experience, Tim.
I'm not talking about anything.
You gotta respect the local laws and get that permit before.
Part of that too is with Creative District, you'll be able to follow filmmakers and follow projects, so you don't have to necessarily have an active project that you're trying to hire people for in order to get value out of the network. You know, you can kind of follow along with what other people are doing and learn from that, and build your experience just by watching what other people are doing. That's a big piece of it too.
And what's the most, I probably don't want to have you judge the most interesting project, but what projects are kind of catching your eye on the site since you launched?
Well, we have a list of featured projects on the site now. If you go to cravedistrict.com and then hit the little menu, you can check our featured projects. There's some really interesting ones in there. There's a documentary coming out of Boston called The Joe Donovan Project, which is about a young man who was wrongly accused and sentenced for a murder and spent I don't even know how many years in jail. And then there's The Vagine Regime, which is a documentary about gender issues in roller derby. And then there's a feature film by Kestrin Pantera, who's a filmmaker here in LA, called Let's Ruin It with Babies, which is pretty hilarious. That one's completed. We also gave a finishing grant to Fort Tilden, which is a feature film, two first-time directors that premiered at South by Southwest and actually ended up winning the grand jury prize there. So there's quite a broad range of films there. We have some others that we have our eye on for potential featuring and grants. There's also, if you see that short film on there, Chairs, we like, it's again, it's just the sort of broad range of projects. We like that one in particular because it shows the storyboards and the kind of process of making that film. That one's a little earlier on. And a lot of those films also have open collaborator positions, so they're actually looking to hire people. Yeah.
And so you can go on there and create. So I'm looking at Chairs right now. So it looks, it's a really nice design that the site has. And I guess you can go in and just, and you can build this yourself. Is that how it works?
Yeah, it's pretty easy. You know, you add this sort of background photo, and then it kind of works like a blog. You know, you can post photos and text and video. And just kind of customize that to the way you want it to look. Our goal was to kind of have our design be really in the background and to let the creator's content lead, you know, with the design there. I think you can see that. I mean, our logo is kind of non-existent on that page, creator content.
It's really cool. Well, best of luck with this. It's never easy to start anything, but it's as you know.
We're in a really good position. We've got a really strong team. Technicolor is super supportive. And like I said before, I think it's finally the right time for this kind of project. So we're confident. We feel good.
Excellent. Cool. That's great. So you can find it at creativedistrict.com. And sign up if you have a need to produce something, or I guess you can sign up and if you have something in the works to get a grant, get that thing funded. So good stuff. Well, thanks for joining us. And would you mind sticking around to talk about some news?
Sure.
We won't put you on the spot. Like I said, we like to make the show mostly about our guests, but Tim and I usually go through the week's news. This is Tim and I's therapy session.
It helps us keep up and deal with the things that are happening in the web video space, like Disney purchasing Maker Studios.
That's a little bit of news there, yeah. No big deal.
So this was a rumor last week, and now it's like the real deal. So $500 million. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of grants, right?
Yeah.
for Maker.
Yeah,
Tim,
what's your take on it, Mickey?
It's interesting to me. So Maker doesn't own the content, right? They're a network of creators. It's more about the.
They have a network of creators, but then they also recently bought Blip, so they own Blip. And so Blip does have original content that Blip has produced, but then there are Blip producers that own the content and monetize through pre-roll. And a lot of those pre-rolls on Blip were Disney ads. So I've always wondered how much Disney was spending on Blip versus how much they paid for Maker.
Well, I mean, you'll see that a lot. You know, a potential acquirer will partner with a startup as a way to kind of get more information. And, you know, I wonder. It's interesting. I think, to me, it seems like the most, and I don't have as much information as you do, but it seems like the most valuable piece of that acquisition is the audience, right? I mean, how many billions of views, right? That seems like that's what Disney was really going for there. Which is interesting, interesting.
It is very interesting. It seems to me like there's kind of a run now on places for highly, you know, maybe high budget or at least highly produced, you know, real professional production kinds of programming. There seems to be quite a bit of a land grab right now with, you know, Disney essentially acquiring Blip and Maker in the process. But Yahoo, according to Engadget, is also launching its video platform, and they're trying to poach YouTube stars in the process, right? So they're, you know, looking to grab people with audience. And according to Engadget, the Yahoo platform may not be something that, you know, the guy like me who does videos in his basement can become a part of. So they're looking for more professional kind of programming versus a little bit less of the amateur.
Yeah,
cable
Yahoo's always been that way. You know, where they've gone after celebrity type content. I mean, Katie Couric, those types of things. And it'll be interesting to see what they're able to acquire or license for this new platform.
I guess we're going to start seeing like exclusives, right? I mean, what, you'll have somebody that, you know, is only on Yahoo, right? And is YouTube going to tolerate the trailer to direct them that way?
That's my question, because you know, Disney just paid all this money for an audience that essentially belongs to Google, right? I mean, most of the audience is on YouTube, no?
It is, and I think that's kind of the fight right now, because a lot of YouTube creators feel like they don't own their audience, that Google has that ability to transact with them, and they've tried to do things like some compromises where, you know, now you have the Google Plus capability where you can, you know, follow your top fans and develop a relationship outside of YouTube with them. But you're right. I mean, it's an audience that Google largely controls through YouTube, and, you know, these folks, when they leave, have that same following. I've seen a few in the gamer space have left YouTube over some of the issues related to Content ID, and, you know, the audience is kind of stuck with them, but not really, because it's not showing up in their feeds where all the other stuff is, and it's tough, you know? So I don't know how it's going to transpire, especially for people that are in this habit of approaching YouTube like they would their Facebook channel when they pop in, you know? So it's...
Well, just all I have to say is remember MySpace.
That's right. Which version, Tim? The current one or the other one or the other one before that? So
exactly.
Yeah, it moves quickly. So TubeFilter also has a story on music labels that they're favoring more mashups versus official music videos. And I guess they're making more money on cover. Go figure. Mashups, covers, and tribute versions of music videos than they do off the music videos themselves.
Wow. Well, the covers don't cost them any money, right?
That's right. So they stop suing, and all of a sudden they're making money off of this stuff. Go figure. But it's fascinating. And I see a lot of this, right? If you do a search for a song, like fans just take these songs and make tribute videos from them, often with other copyrighted footage as well. But
That Frozen song seemed to do pretty well with covers for everybody involved.
I don't think I actually heard the original before I heard 75, you know, versions of it. And that was encouraged, right? They actually went out there and asked people to do that. Now,
which was mind-boggling to me that Disney, who has traditionally been so conservative, like, were so cool in the way that they approached it and a way the strategy that they put behind user-generated content. It was really cool.
And it was mostly on YouTube, though, right? So what is it going to now be on Blip when they start to ramp that up?
Well, I don't think it's going to be on Amazon.
No, it won't. But there will be other things on Amazon, right? The streaming service is continuing, the rumors. So Amazon has apparently going to have some new set-top box or something coming out this week to
That seems to be a rumor that there's going to be like a Roku-type box and also that they've got some new pilots that have been greenlit.
Hey, Tim, how many boxes do you have hooked up to your television?
I couldn't count. I have no idea.
Because it seems like...
I physically have to go look.
It's like a different box for, you know, for every service now. So it's... Mickey, how many boxes do you have hooked up to your TV?
Three.
So what do you have?
I have the DirecTV box, which I wouldn't have if it weren't for sports.
Okay.
I have the Apple TV. Mm-hmm. And a DVD player that hasn't been used in probably 3 years.
Got it. I've got a VCR somewhere in my house. But you know, what's funny about this is that, you know, I think we're seeing like kind of, it's weird because people want their own box, yet they allow other boxes to use it too, right? So I've got every box because I review this stuff, but I just picked up the Roku streaming stick, which at the moment I think is probably the best box in the market. It's not the fastest or whatever, but it just plugs in like a Chromecast, but you get like all the Roku stuff. And, you know, it's great. It's got Amazon. It has Netflix. It's everything you could, you know, possibly want on. It's got YouTube also, I think, on board as well. So why would Amazon even need to create their own box unless they're giving it away for free? It just doesn't make sense to me.
Well, I think it gives them another way of controlling a platform and having a platform that they can sell advertising on or sell more of their products on.
Right. So, you can put an Amazon store on it or something.
Yeah, it's really about selling stuff on Amazon and having, you know, more drones deliver things.
That's right. Well, I might finally realize when I was a kid in the 80s, I used to read like the magazine about living in the future, and one of those things was that you could buy things through your television. So perhaps this is like...
Yeah, it will enable e-commerce through television. I mean, like you might be staying at a hotel like, you know, in Hungary or something, and you might be able to get delivered there.
You know, it's funny you should mention that, Tim, because because the Grand Budapest Hotel is the number 5 movie of the week this week.
I heard it was only in 977 theaters.
That is correct. That is correct. It's like an indie film or something, so it's got a huge fan base apparently. So pretty cool movie. It's a period piece, you know.
About I hear it's all the, beautiful. I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it either, but it looks pretty good. So check that. I'm always looking for new kinds of movies because there's so much predictability. I can't stand it anymore. Once you get past 30, everything's the same. You know what I mean? It's just killing me. So Mr. Peabody and Sherman is number 4. Number 3 is Muppets Most Wanted. Divergent is in at number 2. It's almost brought in $100 million overall.
The young ladies like that movie.
And it's like a Hunger Games thing, right? It's just more of the same. Noah is number 1, $44.3 million this weekend. So
did you ever sing the Noah song at camp on?
No.
There's a song. I don't know it.
I don't know it either.
I didn't go to that camp.
I didn't go to that camp either. It is an Old Testament story, but we never sung a song about him in Hebrew school. Yeah. But, you know, Tim, you've been predicting this biblical thing. So what's the next biblical film we'll see on the horizon?
Jesus, I don't know, man.
That's all you got.
That's the title. It's called Jesus.
I don't know, man. That'll be another limited release. So,
yeah.
But we're going to see
one theater in my backyard.
That's great. Well, Noah is coming in quite well there. So there was a great Bill Cosby skit of Noah, which it's on Spotify. You can pull that up. Pretty funny stuff. So
Bill Cosby was at South by Southwest. I saw him there. It was awesome.
Who wasn't there?
Yeah, it was Funny or Die had a party there, and Bill Cosby did a stand-up routine, and it was awesome. It was a sit-down routine for him. He's 76 years old, but he was hilarious.
He still got it. He has still got it. For a while, he was the most highly compensated entertainer in the country, you know, back in the days of the Cosby Show. And I still love those sweaters.
I wonder if you've ever gone to a convention of theater owners.
I don't know, but CinemaCon 2014 happened. Did you go to this one, Tim? Because you go to all this stuff. Did you?
I did not, but my friend Ted Shilowitz was there, and he told me it was amazing. He had a blast. He had a big dog and pony show where he announced a new thing with Barco Theaters and Fox Studios. It's called Escape, and it's a three-wall theater. So you got the screen in front, and then you got two other screens. I'm sorry, it's a three-screen theater. So you've got screens on both sides of the where you're sitting, you know. So you're looking straight ahead, but then the walls are also movie screens as well. Mm. So it's really cool. I saw an early version of it, and then at CinemaCon they had a more advanced version of it. But if you ever saw Muppet 3D, the movie Muppet 3D, where, you know, there's they fire a cannon on the main screen and then it blows up the theater. That kind of thing where you can have all – creatively you can do so much more than just on one screen. So it's really cool to see that. And I think Fox is going to have some movies coming out this fall that will take advantage of that. So instead of having 3D glasses, you're having a 3D experience in the physical theater.
That's interesting, because that's one thing that's going to be very hard to translate back to the home user, right, which I think is kind of they're trying to stop
that, that's the goal. It's you know, like CinemaScope in the 1950s was fighting TV. This is, you know, kind of fighting the internet and the TV and everything else.
And then you got this Oculus Rift, which could
got bought for two billion.
You know, let me ask you this, Mickey. You're a startup creator. You've had to work your butt off to build a product that's real, right? You have to have a business. Like, you had to build this thing up from scratch that you'd have, you know, users and clients and advertise all this stuff. And now you've got these people who don't even have a viable product yet, which is just like a concept. And they're selling it for $2 billion.
They've got to have more than that. I mean, we don't know. You know, who knows what they're actually selling. But, I mean, they must have some proprietary technology.
They do have demos of the units. I mean, you can wear the units. Yeah.
They have a dev kit.
Yes. Yeah.
But it's just mind-boggling to me. But I think what's cool about it is I've seen the Oculus Rift. Like, they have a cinema demo where you can basically watch a movie in a virtual theater, and it looks really cool. So I haven't tried one yet, but people I've talked to have, and they've said it's great, although there is some seasickness involved with
especially for women, I guess. Dana Boyd wrote an article about how women tend to vomit more.
Oh, really?
I don't know. I glanced through it yesterday. I saw it come up yesterday on Twitter.
Ted told me that there was a woman that threw up during the demo of that of the Escape technology at CinemaCon, but it was later revealed that she'd been out partying all night before. So
that'll do it.
Don't know.
That'll do it. So, last story this week, considering we've got a DirecTV user on the call here, the Dodgers and the baseball team and DirecTV trade barbs as a standoff threatens opening day. We're seeing more and more of these fights between broadcasters. And so are you able to watch the Dodgers on your DirecTV this week?
I'm not much of a baseball fan, so I don't know.
So no loss here.
Badminton, right? That's why you have DirecTV.
Yeah, that's the one. And curling.
Curling. That curling reminds me of a story about Comcast and Apple.
It does. And what's going on there, Tim? Because I think there's some net neutrality discussion happening here.
Yeah, there seems to be a deal where Apple is trying to cut a deal with Comcast to make sure that all the Apple content delivers, you know, similar to the Netflix deal. So it'll be interesting to see how all this plays out and how the little guy gets shut out, because they have to do it. They have to shut out the independent content creator.
Which stinks.
It's the way it is, man.
Yeah, no, the man has control, although we'll see what happens. Mickey, are you hearing anything about that in your sphere, about, you know, these Comcast deals and net neutrality? Are people that you're talking to that are producing independently concerned about
these things? I'm not hearing it from creators. Just the people we're working with are more indie at this point and more, you know, happy to get their their projects viewed by anyone at any means. So I'm not hearing that yet. I did hear some talk at South by Southwest about, you know, sort of what it means for the industry, but I don't know. I mean, Tim, have you heard how it's like trickling down to independent creators or?
Yeah, it's something that independent creators need to pay attention to and figure out if there's any way to stop it. Because if, you know, it's kind of like, imagine if on the freeway somebody could pay to go use the carpool lane but not have a carpool. And you would have to pay $10,000 a day to use the carpool lane. How many people would use it? Well, not that many, but they would have high speed and they would get places faster, whereas everybody else would be stuck in that. And then if you happen to take a taxi cab that had paid the $10,000 and they get to go through that carpool lane at a higher speed, you know, what taxi cab service are you going to take? Are you going to take the one that gets to go in the high speed lane, or are you going to take the one that sits in traffic with everybody else? And that's where the issue comes in, is that if you as an independent content creator can't have your videos viewed because they're being throttled, people aren't going to watch them. So
I don't know what the answer is.
It's almost modeling the way things work in traditional media. I mean,
exactly. And before that has to happen. If the big companies are going to survive, they have to figure out a way to shut down all this other entertainment that's taking away from their entertainment.
Yeah, they've got to put scarcity back into the market, and unfortunately that will come at the expense of the little guys and gals that are out there, and there are quite a few of them building up
audiences. The genie needs to go back in the bottle.
But I predict that there will be some way to route around this problem. So, you know, it won't be easy, but I'm sure just like, you know, they were thwarted on copyright, I think this will there'll be very creative people.
Well, yeah, I mean, the flip side of that is that the companies are sort of recognizing that they can benefit from all of this activity as well. I mean, the success of YouTube and the Maker Studios, you know, acquisition we just talked about. I mean, I don't think Disney bought Maker Studios to shut it down, right? So, I mean, I think...
Famous last words.
That's true.
Replay that in a year, right? But we'll see what happens. Well, Mickey, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Thanks, Mickey.
Today.
It's been fun. Thanks a lot, guys.
And where can we got your address before. Let's hear it again. Where can people find the Creative District and get on board?
CreativeDistrict.com, now open to the public.
And if they want to follow you, Fantastic. How do they follow you? Where do they find you?
I'm Mickeypedia everywhere, MickiePedia.
Cool. That is a very creative Twitter handle.
Thank you.
Works great. Tim, where can people find you?
At One Tim Street.
Excellent. You can find me at LONSEIDMAN. And we do this show usually every Sunday at 11:30 a.m. Eastern, 8:30 Pacific. But this week we just decided to do it on Monday. So, but next week we'll be back at our usual time. You can follow us at BehindTheVideo.com. And that's our Google Plus page. So if you follow that, you'll get a little notification when we schedule the hangout. And you can get us on Stitcher, on iTunes, and wherever fine podcasts are served for free. You can find us there. Just hit the subscribe button and leave us some comments, too, because we'd like to know how we're doing. So please do that as well. And that will do it for this edition of Behind the Video. We are a wrap.
Stories for this episode were compiled by producer Jason Perrier. Follow him on Twitter at JASONPERRIER. Behind the Video is a production of 8th Digital Incorporated and the Independent Media Network, LLC. All rights reserved.